Hello again and welcome to another episode of Quick Question with Soren and Daniel, the podcast where two best friends and TV writers ask each other questions and give each other answers. I am one half of this podcast, author, writer, historian, and guy who missed his cue in a high school play by about 15 minutes due to complications related to diarrhea, Daniel O'Brien. And I am joined, as always, by my co-host, Mr. Soren Bowie. Soren, top that.
Hello, everybody. I'm Soren Bowie. I'm a father, a woodworker, and I've got to say, like, I'm a hell of a gift giver after this Christmas. But I'm also a man who once told his son, if they ask you at school how often you bathe, you say every day or you say, I don't know. Those are the only answers.
What is the truth?
Maybe like, once a week, maybe two times a week.
Okay. I don't know what's normal.
He gets stinky sometimes. Not in like a homeless sort of way, but in a way where you're like, wow, you smell a lot like yourself right now.
So you fancy yourself a good gift giver? I see that. I buy
that. Yeah, I think I am. And it's very easy in my family because it's not a priority for any of them. Like if my dad wants something, he'll go get it. Or my mom every Christmas will say, no, don't get us anything. Don't get me anything. And they'll give you money. Money is like look, just go get what you want. Like, let's stop the pretense of it all. But I insist on the pretense. And every single time I win them over with the pretense where they're like, God damn, you are such a good gift giver.
That's exciting.
I'll give you an example. This last Christmas, my dad was, I don't know if I told you, but he had broken his hip. And then when he was in the hospital, he got COVID.
And I knew about the COVID thing. I didn't know about the hip thing. Jesus.
Yeah. What a year. It was rough for him. It was a bad year for him. And he was like, I don't want material possessions. That's what he says all the time around Christmas. Cause you know, he get his own shit. And then he also, I can't give him experiences either. Cause he can't go, he's not mobile right now. And so I was like, oh, okay. So I thought long and hard about it. I got him a cameo from Carl Mecklenburg, who was his favorite Denver Bronco from his favorite era, who was like, did this great, awesome cameo that was like, Scott, I heard about your year. Like, I heard it's tough when you broke your hip, you got COVID while you're in the hospital. Like, it just seems like it's unrelenting. I've been in a lot of situations like that where it just felt like we were down and out. And he starts talking about like these Bronco games specifically where he was like, we didn't think there was any hope left, but we kept going. And you know what? We won that game. And like that kind of shit where I was like, yeah, Carl, this is so good. And my dad was really overwhelmed by it. He really liked it.
That's exciting. Yeah. A thing that I'm taking away from that is Cameo, which I feel like I need to do a deep dive into at some point because it seems very interesting. Like, there's obviously like funny and sad things about it, but you're talking about a Bronco I've never heard of before for normal reasons, giving like a very thoughtful present, and I just wonder, like, how many people like him who are not going to be a guest on the Tonight Show right now, and they're probably not going to, like, I don't know if there are conventions that they can go to where they really meet fans and interact in some big way like that. And I wonder if it's possible that Cameo has like opened a completely new world to a very specific kind of celebrity that is either like deep down on the list or just like not what you would typically think of as an in-demand celebrity.
Yeah. I mean, if I was famous enough, I would love to do Cameo because it's such a great way. You get the interaction that like you kind of want from a fan, but you don't have to. It's not like face to face. It's exactly what you want it to be. You say something and then it's over. Also, you get paid. You get paid. But it's like, it just seems ideal to me. I think a lot of people were treating it as kind of a joke. Like, they get like Johnny Bananas from The Challenge and stuff like that.
Right.
And it's just sort of like this fun, hokey thing you can do. It's a little like the celebrity is the butt of the joke, which is a little sad. But then you get ones like this where I just was like, I wonder if any of them are on Cameo. And I found him and I found Steve Atwater and all these guys from the team. And I was like, holy shit. And now I think I want to give cameos for every gift I ever give.
Yeah, it's way more interesting to me to like find someone who might give a thoughtful response. If you're like, this is my dad, here's some money. Here's what he's been through this year. Talk from the heart. That seems way more interesting to me than like, hey, we got Gary Busey to read from this silly script that humiliates him. We have a new sponsor. Thanks to Keeps for supporting Quick Question. Keeps makes easy and affordable hair loss treatment for men. To receive your first month of treatment for free, go to keeps.com/QQ. That's keeps.com/QQ.
Thanks to Hello Tushy for supporting Quick Question. Hello Tushy is a sleek bidet attachment that clips onto your toilet and sprays your butt clean with fresh water. This is a special offer for our listeners. Go to hellotushy.com/QQ for 10% off.
Hey, do you know who made the most on Cameo last year?
Let's see if I could guess. God, this is a fun game because you
have to... can't.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
It has to be somebody in like the exact sweet spot. Okay.
It is.
Let me think. It's not going to be an athlete. It's going to be a celebrity. It's one of the Paul brothers.
No.
Oh.
You're happy that this person makes a lot of money.
Oh, no, then never mind. I was going to guess that woman from Tiger King. She would be my next guess.
Oh, that's a smart guess. No, it's actor Brian Baumgartner, who you might know better as Kevin from The Office.
Of course. Oh, he's the sweet spot.
Isn't that great? Don't you love that for him?
That's really wonderful. Good. Good. I want to see him now. I want to see those. I want to see what he does. Oh, but I do want to back up for a second.
Okay.
Have we talked before on this podcast about how you were in the middle of a play and you went and had diarrhea and then just pretended like everything was fine when you came on stage 20 minutes late?
You know, if I said, yes, we have talked about it, we could just move past this. I know I have that power. But no, it was junior year of high school. It was the play that we did that year was Get Smart, based on the TV show Get Smart. And I played the titular role of Maxwell Smart, Brag Alert. And then opposite of Brag Alert, I got some real nasty diarrhea while I was backstage. And like, I'm on stage for most of that show because it's the lead role. And I was backstage and I knew I had a scene coming up and just, it was not... my stomach was not listening to reason. So I've had stomach problems for most of my life. So I went to the bathroom and was just like, I have to ride this out. I have to just let this happen because the alternative is unacceptable. I'm not going to shit myself on stage or anything like that. And it was the past. So I couldn't like text any of my castmates and be like, stall for some amount of time. I just like disappeared to a bathroom that was like not the backstage bathroom because I didn't want anyone to smell or hear my sins. So I fled to a different bathroom down the hall and just like there's a window in the beginning of this endeavor where I just think I might make this. I might pull this off. if I can just wrap things up real quick. Nope. Nah, I'm not. I know enough time has passed that like the show is moving on without me, and there are a bunch of 15-year-old stage managers talking into their headsets. Where is he? Anybody got eyes on Daniel? And
it must go on. I've heard.
Yeah, and I eventually just like walk into the scene and continue the scene as if it's business as usual. I just pick up my lines and we go. But like you can, It's difficult to explain how I could tell, but I could tell that the two other actors on stage waiting for me had not been saying anything for a while. And like the audience knew something was up too. Everyone in the room was like, this isn't how the play is supposed to go. I think they did some like, cause like it was a plot heavy scene and a scene where like my character needed to be the one giving the information that would move the show forward. So,
you had all the load-bearing stuff.
Yes. Talking to the actors, my co-stars later, I believe there was some like, where is he? He's supposed to be here by now. There was like some very light improv vamping in the beginning, and then just standing still in character waiting for me.
The betrayal they must have felt
when
you didn't show up was like, it must have just been like, I would have been seething if I had been out there. Like, you fucking left me out, hung me out here to dry.
Yeah.
You better be dead.
No, man. I wish.
I was in a play, I think it was by Harold Pinter, called Other Places, that is a period piece. So I had to wear these wool slacks and before the show, as I think most people do, I was a little nervous. I was peeing a lot, and I was peeing in the urinal before, and I was like halfway through peeing before realizing that I was really just nailing the side of these, the zipper, like where the fly opens and there's the extra bit of fabric.
Sure.
I was just nailing that piece of fabric right there. And I was like, oh fuck, oh fuck, oh fuck, oh fuck. I've got to wear a tucked in shirt. So like, I'm just frantically like trying to dry these pants, in the bathroom, just get them as like dry as possible. You can't tell from the outside that they're wet at all. And finally I like decide it's good enough. I run out there, just make it on time, doing the show. And as I'm seated for a lot of it. And as I'm sitting there, I start to like smell the baked in urine of like these wool pants. Cause wool just kind of sort of like holds on to those stenches.
Yeah.
And I'm and I'm just horrified and thinking in my head, like, okay, how close do I have to get to anybody throughout the rest of this play? Let's see. And just scanning these scenes in my head to be like, all right, I could stand a good distance away from Aubrey during that part. That's fine. And like trying to figure it out in my brain that how I'm going to get out of this situation while I'm supposed to be performing. Oof. Yeah. But I made it. I mean,
yeah,
that was not nearly as terrifying as yours. Did you tell people then at the end? Oh, sorry, I got the runs.
I don't think I said I got the runs or even like explicitly diarrhea. I think I was ashamed enough that I was like, I'm really sorry. I got very sick. So like you could interpret that as perhaps he was vomiting or right. nauseous or something like that. And like, I don't know why vomiting is nobler than diarrhea, but it is.
Yeah, it is.
It's just more cosmopolitan, you know?
It's nice to give yourself a visceral out like that.
Yeah.
That like, then they don't have to picture anything coming out of your butt.
Right.
Oh, that's wonderful.
Because also like, never mind. I don't want to get into that.
Okay.
I feel like, let's get into it. I feel like if you think someone just threw up, then it's like, oh, then you can like swish some water and maybe have a mint and like go about your day. If someone was like, I had like crazy bad diarrhea, then it's like, then you will have always had diarrhea until you go home and shower. Like you need to wait. Even if you're completely clean afterwards, it's still like you, like, I can't talk to you until tomorrow. I'm sorry.
It also,
you're just different now.
I think sometimes it clings to you longer than that. Not in a real sense, but like the idea of it. If somebody, there was a girl in my college who, she got very drunk once before we were at school there and had pooped herself at a party. Mm-hmm. I think it was a humiliating experience, and we all found out about it when we got there because like people were so excited to tell any new people what had happened. Then while we were there, it happened again. So
sorry.
Her freshman year and then maybe like her sophomore or junior year, it happened again. And if I ever saw her again, that's how I know her. Like, that's not ever going to go away. She is... and when someone... it seems so cruel now, but I had a friend who started dating her, and we were like, you know what happened, right? Like, we were like trying to like warn him somehow that maybe that was still part of her. It was like on her somehow. And it was really just the stigma. It was us.
No, certainly. And I knew a kid in high school who pooped his pants. And that kid could be the next Elon Musk. He could be giving a press conference about how he, you know, good news, everyone. We're all doing solar energy forever. I figured a way to make it cheaper and better, and it created jobs. And I'll be like, yeah, Daniel O'Brien, last week tonight, just a small question for our viewers. Do you remember when you shit your pants in March? The sun was out. And you had those shoes with like wheels on them, and then you shit your pants in the hallway, and the teachers laughed. Do you remember that? No follow-up questions.
Yeah, that's a pretty good moment. Okay, thank you. Thank you for your time.
I can't believe the show has come to this.
I think it's good. I think what you're doing is there are these people that have their own private little tragedies or like deep humiliations. And when they hear of other people suffering the same thing, especially someone of your stature, Daniel,
uh-huh.
two-time Emmy Award winner.
That's right.
They think, we're all suffering of the human condition.
Yeah.
This is all of us.
I guess we should at some point, though, like really try and make a good episode because I...
Wait, just, I tried
just,
once.
Just once. Just one time. Just because, like, if, like, I want to, if I wanted to get more people to listen to this show, I wouldn't tell them this one.
Yeah, maybe not.
The one that starts out with me, like, really hitting diarrhea, like I'm announcing it at a truck rally.
Well, to be fair, the thing that I just like hearing from some of our audience, the things that they enjoy about the show are things that I did not anticipate. When we had guests on, I was like, yeah, now this is like a polished humming thing. I got a lot of responses from people who were like, I listen to the show for you two. I don't know what the guest thing is all about.
Yeah, well, that's fine. And like, all of our like core fans, the ones who are here for the cue drops and whatnot, and you know, following the breadcrumbs to the truth about what we have to say, those,
yeah,
they're going to stick with us forever for, I'm going to assume, Stockholm Syndrome. But if we want to get some new blood in here, we have to be completely different people with a different podcast.
Yeah.
Sounds like a lot of work.
Let's not do that. Happy New Rear! That's right, everyone. I said New Rear. New Rear, new you. In 2021, don't just make a commitment to wash your hands every time you poop. Go the extra mile and wash your butt. That's right, ladies and gentlemen, the future of pooping has arrived. Okay, it's technically been around for centuries, but it's hideously expensive to poop. Have you guys noticed that? Maybe not, because your toilet paper doesn't actually bear out the cost, but imagine all of the water you're using to get that toilet paper. Imagine all of the trees you're cutting down. Imagine the actual damage that you're doing to the entire world with all of that waste is being flushed down the toilet and all of the work that went into the manufacturing. What if you could poop and then just wash your butt clean with pure glistening water? Well, that's what Hello Tushy offers. Now, the brand Hello Tushy 3.0 Modern Bidet Attachment is here to level the playing field. It's stylish, eco-friendly, easy to install, and affordable. Because of the Hello Tushy, you don't have to wipe at all. You just do your business, you spray, you dry for a little while, and then you go. Most people, I assume, like me, you're going to air dry. Hey, there's no problem with that. You just bake it into the cost of like how long you need to spend on the toilet. You maybe get a few more doom scrolls in there. Who knows? Plus, every Hello Tushy bidet attachment comes with a 60-day risk-free guarantee and a 12-month warranty. You already got a tush on your pot? Well, upgrade to the new 3.0 model. If you're new to the revolution, join millions of happy Hello Tushy customers right now and have a clean butt with every flush.
Now, Soren, I had just a question. Do I have to poop to use the bidet, or can I just,
no,
can I just do it?
You all are allowed to sit on your toilet at any time for a little spritz. And in fact, if you want to get the entire area, they have both an option for your number two, but then they also have an option for females after they pee, which I've tried out, obviously, and it just hits you in a little bit different of an area, gives you a good sense of what it's like to be a woman.
How the other half lives. Yeah, that's pretty cool.
Did you know that the average person uses 57 sheets of toilet paper a day? And that every roll of toilet paper requires 37 gallons of water to be made, a bidet only uses an average of a pint of water. Stop wiping and start washing. It's the smart thing to do. Go to hellotushy.com/QQ to get 10% off plus free shipping. This is a special offer for our listeners. Go to hellotushy.com/QQ for 10% off. hellotushy.com/QQ. Well, Dan, to start our podcast, I have a question for you.
Yeah, start the podcast.
The real part of the podcast.
Yeah.
Have you ever written a letter, a handwritten letter to an idol or somebody that like you revered?
Sort of.
Okay.
Do you want me to talk about it?
Yeah.
So I'll make this story as long as possible. I was in second grade and Power Rangers, the show Mighty Morphin Power Rangers, had just come out. And it started out on Saturday mornings. And I immediately loved that show and was like, this is going to be my identity, is Mighty Morphin Power Rangers fan. I'm super into this. This is my world right now. And I was not alone. The show became popular and very quickly became a Monday to Friday concern. It was no longer Saturday mornings. You know what that means. It's Monday to Friday. And it aired, I want to say, at 2 or 2:30 on Monday through Friday. And I was in school and you could have just taped the show back way back in the past. You could put a single VHS tape into your VCR and program it to record one show a day at a certain time. So that would be an elegant solution for someone who was at school when the show aired, if you really loved it like I did. But in my house, my mom was taping all my children from 1 o'clock to 2 o'clock. I say my mom. I watched it with her. I loved all my children back in the day. So we couldn't tape both of those shows, and mom obviously gets precedence. And this constituted the greatest problem I'd faced in my small, young life at the time, was that I had no way of seeing this show that I really loved. I had absolutely no options to see it. So I wrote to Fox, which was the network that was airing it, Fox Kids. I wrote to them and I explained, I didn't dress it up with anything fancy. I was like, you understand where I'm coming from, Fox. My mom tapes all my children, so I can't possibly tape this show, and I really love it. I'm probably its biggest fan. And it would just mean the world to me if you solved my problem somehow in all of your Fox glory. I don't even know what that means. But to prove how important this is to me, I've collected 100 signatures from kids in my school just to co-sign this letter. Even though none of them, this was still uniquely my problem, I was just like, I need you to sign this petition to Fox because my parents, I guess, had explained to me the petitions work. that wasn't an idea. I wasn't an original thought of mine. Where it's like, what's really going to convince them? Jesse Bartley's signature. That's going to send me over the map. So I got 100 signatures and convinced my brother David to write a similar letter and get signatures from his grade, even though he didn't give a shit about Power Rangers. And we sent these letters in to Fox. I was like, please solve this problem for me. And they wrote back to me, Mr. Fox, and they're like, we heard your concerns. That makes sense.
What?
We are going to move the show to 4:30. Now, I don't think...
What?
In retrospect, I don't think I did that. I think they probably already had that plan to move it to 4:30. I think programming a show that was meant for elementary kids at 2:30 was a bad programming decision, and they probably realized that they were going to be missing most of their target demographic, either to school or all my children. But at the time, they really made it seem like I pushed them to doing this. And they also, in addition, made me a lifetime member of the Fox Kids Club, which just entitled you to a Fox Kids magazine once a month that I got until Fox Kids Club magazine shut down, like all the other great magazines.
That's wild.
It's wild.
But you may have changed Fox.
I may have, and it's certainly whether I did or not, I certainly thought I did at the time, which ended up being a very powerful lesson for me, and I'm really glad that the incredible instincts of my mom when I'm complaining about this problem, and she just says, you should write a letter to Fox and get your classmates to sign it. That was her solution to this, and then it fucking worked. What a win for the family.
That's incredible.
Not an insignificant chance that that's why I'm a writer today.
God damn. That's so crazy. I'm gonna poke around Fox because they still own my show, and I'm gonna get to the bottom of this. That's wild, yeah. Dan. That's a great story.
It's very, and it manages to keep me humble as well, because even though I got an official Fox Kids Club card that I kept in my child wallet, and I got the magazine, they spelled my name wrong. And I know what you're thinking, O'Brien. They probably spelled it with an A instead of an E, but no, they jammed a V in there.
The old world spelling.
O-B-V-R-I-E-N.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that's Celtic, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Very cool.
Thanks, man.
Oh, they made you feel good, and then they just cut you down a little bit. Yeah. Wow, that's kind of victory.
Yeah, someone should have put a V in Icarus's name, and then that guy would have been flying just 6 feet above the earth for a while and ruling the fucking day.
You're like, this is good. This is good for me. I gotta go higher. Well, I want to tell you a story about a
a thing that I did, and I was probably too old for this. Yours sounds very cute and endearing. There's an author that I really enjoyed at the end of high school and all throughout college. I really loved his work. And
Tucker Max.
And I graduated. It was, yeah, Tucker Max. I will say his name because I don't think it hurts him at all. It's Neil Pollack.
Oh, yeah.
He wrote a book called The Anthology of American Literature, which is just a bunch of his short stories and articles. And then he's got a book called Nevermind the Pollocks, I think.
Yeah.
He's got a few other books, but I was a huge, huge fan when I was younger. And so it turns out when I was, looks like by the time I was about 25, and you'll know exactly why I know the exact age here in a second. I messaged him and I found his email and I messaged him. It's, first of all, the instinct that humans have to, when they're so moved by somebody's art or like what they've done, that you feel this like overwhelming urge to be like, I have to let them know I exist. Mm-hmm. I have to write them. I have to tell them that they mean something to me. I don't know what else to do with this. So I wrote him asking if he wanted me to be his assistant.
Wow.
And yeah, I'm looking at the email right now. I think I just assumed that anyone who was a published author had a bunch of money and probably needed an assistant. And mm-hmm. I was like, well, you got to shoot your shot. You miss 100% of the shots you don't take.
That's right.
And so I wrote him and it says, first off, I am an avid fan of your work and I've read almost all and at least two of your books. That was a little joke I was doing to show him that I had chops. Mm-hmm. With that said, I want to offer you the opportunity to pay me money. I have no idea if you're in need of an assistant or if you're the type of writer who would rather not have one. See how there's only two options. Mm. It's that either you need an assistant or you're the type of writer who's like, no, I don't need that in my life. My robot butler does it for me. But I'm currently leaving my job and I'm giving you first dibs. I am an LA-based writer and have included a short publication from The Sun magazine to prove that I'm impossibly good at it. Furthermore, I have previously worked as an assistant to a talent manager, so I fully understand what is expected of the position. I have included a resume in case you'd like to see my work history or all the affirmative adjectives I use when describing myself. Thank you for taking the time to read this. I hope we can talk at some point. Sincerely, Soren Bowie. P.S. Should you choose not to accept me as an assistant, please now take time to consider me as a house painter.
Okay, that's good.
Then another little joke to end it off with. And, you know, agonized over this for days, probably, thinking of, like, just the right words. I was James Joyce, writing it one sentence at a time. Like, one sentence, that's it for the day. Mm-hmm. Finally had constructed, obviously, this beautiful, beautiful letter and sent it off to him. He declined. He wrote me back, though.
Oh, wait, give me... That really bummed me out.
I think as it should. I think it's pretty deeply humiliating. It's really rough to go back and revisit it now and see what I... Not only, like, what I thought he'd want, but also, like... just who I thought I was.
Yeah. I mean, that's...
And it's rough.
It's... I hope you take it as a compliment. The reason that it bums me out is because it's so surprising and uncharacteristic of you.
Yeah, like, it's pretty desperate.
I would expect me to have sent a letter like that to, like, Slimer at some point in my childhood. But the fact that it's you doing it at 25 is world-shaking.
Yeah, it's going to get worse, Dan, because this is how I knew I was 25 at the time. He responded and said that he's flattered that he'd think he was important enough that he'd require an assistant. But he says, obviously, I'm not in a position where I can afford that. And then I can see that the email following that, not on the same thread, says, my birthday. And it says, dear Neil, quick exposition. I'm the guy who offered to be your assistant. Now, for the terrific news, you're invited to my birthday party.
Holy fucking shit, Soren!
I'm turning 25 on July 2nd, and we are celebrating on Saturday, June 30th. We will likely go to the Red Lion on Glendale Boulevard in Silver Lake.
Great sausage
and
there.
I can first... Yeah, it's a great place. On tap, Jägermeister. It's really cute. And I can foresee no reason why this would interest you other than curiosity. However, if you are free that night and can find a babysitter, I'm going to come back to that, put a pin in find a babysitter, and would like to join us, then I would love to meet you. Also, my friends, with the exception of a few, are a lot of fun to hang out with. Now, I completely understand if you don't want to spend your evening with a bunch of strangers. And if that's the case, then just ignore this email. That's it. Stay well. Soren. P.S. Oh, fuck. I didn't even see that. Oh, rough.
Shit. What could it be?
It says Regina is welcome to come as well. So Regina is his wife. Now, here's this. This takes me back to that babysitter part. It was also a part of my life where I thought the more I knew about him would be more helpful, and like the more that I was like, it wouldn't look crazy or creepy at all if I was like, no, I know you've got a kid. I know what your wife's name is. That I was just like such a big fan. Like, look how easily I could slide into being your assistant because I already know everybody. And it's looking at it now, it's like my ears get very hot and like my neck gets itchy. It's really rough. So it gets worse.
Oh boy.
Go ahead. If you
want. No, I just want, like, before you say whatever you're going to say, I want you to know that I can't be the stable and balanced one on this podcast. We can't switch for too long.
Apparently I was 25, but this feels like I was 14. Like, this feels so long ago that I'm humiliated by it.
Okay.
I don't even know who this person was. Okay. He wrote, Soren, : thanks so much for your invite, but I have domestic duties that night. I can't even begin to write about them. Have fun and happy birthday. He's being so kind.
Your pal is a fucking saint. God almighty.
He's being so fucking nice to me. And then... I wrote him back. And then I wrote him back. And I said, I understand completely. Due to some sort of vermin infestation at the Red Lion, we are moving the celebration to Tuesday night, July 3rd, at the Edendale Grill.
Good lord.
He elected not to write back after that, and our communication sort of stopped. That was the end of our epistolary relationship. But
sat down with his wife and showed her the emails and was like, so I've put in enough for this kid, right? I've done enough. I'm not an asshole if I don't respond anymore, right? Okay, good. Let's go to sleep.
I see now, though, that if I just do a search for his name through Google, I see a couple other times where I tried to contact him. But what I did was he was on an email list of people where I sent published writing or a sketch that I had done. So I continued to send this poor guy things that I thought he might like and like tried to impress him. So it is wildly out of character for me. I never did that with anybody else. I was like, I had obsessions as a child, like Kirby Puckett. I really liked, he was a baseball player for the Minnesota Twins. It never even crossed my mind that I would ever write a letter to him. That seemed crazy. This was the first person that I'd ever written to. And I think, I don't know what led to it. Maybe there was somebody else who I'd heard had gotten a job by like, just like being bold, going out there and saying, hey, I like what you do. Do you need any help? And they were like, yeah, and it worked. And I was like, I could do that.
Yeah.
All I got to do is pierce the veil. Like, if I can cross this little stream, like, I can reach him on the other side. And so I did it, and it was such a mistake. It was such a big, massive, horrible mistake.
Well, I don't think cold emailing him looking for a job as an assistant was a bad idea. I'm not coming down on that. I think it's.
Oh, you think there's something wrong with the approach I took?
Yes. It's just the content that I have notes on.
You got to remember it was a different time, Daniel. I bet these jokes were hits back then.
It makes me think about, because you are a known personality. I imagine you've gotten, as you're like reading off that letter to me, I'm thinking of every similar letter that I'm certain you've gotten over Twitter DM or private message somewhere else, Facebook, email, whatever, and how you would have responded to them. Not like, not what you have said to the sender, but like what you would have thought and what you would have wished you could have said to the sender.
Yeah. How would I candidly react to it? It's not pleasant. It just makes me like him more because he was so nice. I should actually write him.
Yeah, you should
write
absolutely.
Him and see how nice he is.
What is he up to now, by the way? Because I remember reading his stuff. You turned me on to him years ago.
Yeah, he stopped doing satire after a while. He was a great satirist. Mm-hmm. Had like built this really beautiful, cool character, and then stopped doing that and started writing about weed and then yoga. I think he started blogging about his kid for a while, and then he wrote a lot about yoga. And so his whole sort of lifestyle changed, and I sort of stopped. I fell off around that point. But man, I was clearly infatuated with this guy, and I was like, I just got to try it. This would be my dream job.
It is. So so many questions. I hope I can keep track of them. Were you talking to anyone else about this while you were doing it? Were you running the letter by anyone, or talking to like your buddy Dan, friend of the show, Dan Campana? Were you telling him like, you know, this author that we both like, I'm going to reach out to him. Do you think this is a good idea? Did anyone know that you were doing this?
No, I definitely didn't run maybe the birthday part, but I didn't run the letter by anyone. And that was, I think it's, I have to guess that it's because I was like, listen, I'm a great writer. I could do this.
Okay.
And tried to make it my own, and really just, what a whiff.
This next question is possibly two questions. Did you think there was a chance that he would show up to your birthday party, or did you think the idea of inviting him was funny and that he would find it funny?
No. I think that I intended for him to show up at my birthday.
Okay, then this question has become two. What would you have said to your friends who were getting you Jägermeister straight from the tap, which I guess is something you wanted? What would you say to them if this older man showed up with his wife and was like, good news, Soren, I got a sitter like you asked. Let's chat. What would you have told your 25-year-old friends, all of them at the just like fucking living their lives, having a great time, being young and healthy and fit in Silver Lake, eating sausages and listening to the piano player downstairs, and then Neil Pollock shows up and you're like, excuse me, I have to talk to this man now.
I would have abandoned my own birthday party and gone to like Fred 62's with him and been like, let me buy you a dime bag, let's just talk.
It's so wonderful. I'm so happy you did this. Because I do like the boldness of it. When you sent the follow-up email about your birthday the first time, that's why I wanted to know if you had anyone over your shoulder or anyone that you were communicating with about this. Because if it was me that you were communicating with, I'd be like, hey, what exactly is your goal here? Because the writer's assistant job, sure, that makes sense. But then pivoting to like social peers, I'm not sure what you want out of this relationship now.
Validation. The same thing anybody who's ever messaged a celebrity wants. They just want validation. I mean, maybe the icing on the cake is what they're actually asking for, which is like, let's be in a relationship, or let's get coffee sometime, or anything. But the truth is, like, what at the heart of it all is that this famous person has to know who I am. They mean so much to me. I have to mean anything. It doesn't matter what it is. I have to mean anything to them. I think that, like, looking at it now, I'm pretty sure that that was the case, even if I wasn't aware of it at the time.
Yeah.
But I wanted so badly for him to know that I was there,
right?
That I was a human being too.
I was trying to suss out if like you wanted to pick his brain and learn from him, or if you wanted to, you wanted him to meet you so he would understand that you were both peers, like
well,
just like, a couple of, just a couple of us comedy writers hanging out, like we should be friends because you're funny and talented and I'm funny and talented. You just don't know who I am yet, but once you do know, then like we can sit in like tea houses and talk about how difficult the craft of writing is and how misunderstood comedy geniuses are.
So that would have obviously been a great end goal. That would have been had that outcome happened, I would have been over the moon. I think at the time I really was coming from a position of I could learn a lot from him, and that's what I was telling myself.
Okay.
Is I was like, there's so much I could learn from him. What I really just wanted was I think if we talked, I could make him laugh. Like that kind of thing.
I get that.
There's like I could and I wanted that. And boy, did I reach for it, and over and over.
Is there anyone that you would like to reach out to now? I can't imagine that you would because of time and experience, but is there someone that would fill a similar place in your heart as Neil did at the time, where it's like, I want this person to know who I am. I want to like be on their radar and get that kind of validation.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, Seth MacFarlane. I'd love if that guy knew who I was.
Thanks to Keeps for supporting Quick Question. Keeps makes easy and affordable hair loss treatment for men. Losing hair is the worst. 2 out of 3 guys will experience hair loss by the time they're 35. I turned 35 last week, and there's 3 people working on this podcast right now, and I do not like my odds here. Luckily, thanks to today's advancements in science, Keeps offers proven treatments that can help treat the symptoms of hair loss and help you keep the hair you have. The sooner you start using Keeps, the more hair you'll save, so act fast. Many men even experience hair regrowth with Keeps treatments. Keeps offers their products at half the cost of your local pharmacy. You don't have to go broke to avoid going bald. These treatments start at just $10 a month. To take action and prevent hair loss, get your first month of treatment for free by going to keeps.com/QQ. That's KEEPS.com/QQ for your first month of treatment for free. Oh, very good. I have a question for you, unless there's more meat on this bone for you.
Like, go on.
If you found absolutely any other correspondence between you and Neil. This question is COVID or quarantine related, rather pandemic related. Jesus, is there anything, any piece of pop culture that you've made time for, not made time for, but that you've like invested yourself in during the pandemic that you would not have otherwise made time for because of life stuff, of going to a job and going to restaurants and taking your family places?
Yes. Oh, do you want to go first?
I do, yeah.
Okay.
I recently watched all of Lord of the Rings. It's very good.
Whoa! Daniel!
I know.
I'm so proud of you. That was such a big blind spot for you.
It was a huge blind spot. Like, it didn't... Like, I didn't start out trying to be contrarian. It genuinely didn't look appealing to me when it first came out. And I missed it in the theaters. And my brother, who's obsessed with them, tried to get me to watch Fellowship once, and I fell asleep and just sort of determined from that, I guess this stuff isn't for me. And then once something like that snowballs, then it sort of becomes, it became fun to me that I hadn't seen it. And I wasn't trying to be a prick about it. I was just like, the more time passed, the fun, and the more time I had spent rewatching things that I'd already seen or watching things that were terrible, it all became, the idea of it became very funny to me. The idea that I'd seen Tiptoes 3 times but none of the Lord of the Rings, or just like rewatching clips on YouTube of things, that fucking Hot Wings show where that idiot makes people eat hot wings. I've watched all of those, some of them multiple times, but I hadn't seen
that bridge is burned now, by the way.
But I hadn't seen Lord of the Rings, and you know, just like at the end of my life, thinking about doing an audit of things that I'd seen, it was really funny to me. They're like, so it looks like you watched this cut for time John Mulaney SNL sketch. The amount of times that it takes to watch Fellowship, but you didn't watch Fellowship. How do you feel about that? And I'd be like, no regrets. God, send me wherever. That's how I felt for a long time. Just that it was funny that I hadn't seen it for an audience of no one. And then I watched it last weekend, and it's very good. I know I'm not surprising anyone about this, and I'm also
aware that this Oscar-winning film was good.
I'm also like, I found that I'm not coming to it with any nuance or like anything. Like, I don't have a perspective on it that has been enhanced or aided by time, by the fact that I'm watching it so much for so many years after it came out. I'm bringing nothing fresh to it. I'm watching it and like texting people that scene in Fellowship where the Fellowship like forms and they all like decide we're the team that's going to do it in the music place. That's real effective. Those guys knew what they were doing when they made that scene. And just like watching things, and like Carl Urban's character shows up in the second one to help fight at the place, and the music swells, and I'm like, oh cool, it's that guy, he's cool.
It's like Riders of Rohan.
Just these very basic ass things where I'm sitting there like resisting the urge to text my brother, yeah, Aragorn's pretty cool, huh? Do you ever think of it? Like, I know you like this movie, but like, do you ever think that Aragorn's pretty cool? Because that's what I think. Oh man, this person died. That sucks. He was just changing his mind about being a bad guy, and now he's dead. What a bummer.
Your brother is giving a child a bath, getting soap in his eye, just like looks at a text, is like, no, and just goes back to what he's doing. Well, that's about how I appreciate movies now, Daniel. So that was right in my wheelhouse. You could have texted me.
Okay. I mean, I still can.
I got nothing. Are you done with it?
Yeah, I'm done with it. And I might take a little bit of time and then watch the extended editions, because that's something
that's my
brother and sister-in-law have done a bunch of times, and I really want to do, just because I finished them and then went on. I thought I missed something, so I googled what happened to Saruman, because he's just not in the third movie, and then Wikipedia is like, he's in the extended version, you see him doing da 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 da, and as soon as I knew that, like, extended version doesn't just mean scenes are longer, or like, stuff that should have been cut was rightly cut, it sounds like there's some like pretty impactful things that happen in these extended editions.
Huge plot points and like, yeah, stuff that like, I guess you could forgive, but it's, I don't know why they the movie is already, that Return of the King is like 4 hours long. And at that point, make your movie as long as you want. Who's crunching your numbers at that point saying, no, you got to cap it at 4. So it is crazy that they left out a bunch of stuff.
Who's breathing down Peter Jackson's neck? This has got to be a tight 350, buddy.
Yeah. New Line is not telling Peter Jackson what to do anymore. But that movie also has credits at the end of it, the extended cut. And I know this from when I tested DVDs back in the day. The credits are 40 minutes long.
Yikes.
Yeah. So don't sit through those. Because what they did is the Phantom had begun, and I don't know what their affiliation was with all these people. Like, they joined some sort of Fellowship of the Ring that meant that they had special privileges with the movie or something, but then they got their names in the credits. So there's a bunch of people that are, I don't know, dressed like hobbits right now in their lives, and they are in that movie.
That's cool.
Oh, did you see Flight of the Conchords? What's his name?
Brett or Jermaine?
Brett. Brett's an elf. Oh. Brett's an elf.
I did not.
And like, kind of an important elf. I think he's got lines.
In the original trilogy? Whatever happened in The Hobbit?
No. Oh. In the original trilogy, yeah. I'm forgetting everybody's names. What's the elf woman's name? Liv Tyler's character.
Eowyn? Something like that?
Eowyn, yeah. Eowyn, when Eowyn wants to go back, she's supposed to be going to the ships, and she's like, I can't do it. I gotta go back. He's the one who's like trying to convince her not to.
Oh.
Yep. And Viggo Mortensen broke his foot kicking an orc helmet. Did you know
no,
that?
No, I didn't. Again, I need to watch it a second time. My takeaway at first bluff is that Legolas sure can shoot, huh?
Yeah.
He sure can.
I texted my brother and sister-in-law. I liked when the river became horses. Because that's a scene that happens. And it's tight as hell.
It's just a Chris Farley.
I don't
movie.
Totally know what everyone's name is. And sometimes the stakes were kind of murky to me. But
yeah, they all look kind of similar. There's the king that has two sons, and I can't tell them apart.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's a good one.
But listeners, if you haven't seen Lord of the Rings, really, really give them a shot. I was skeptical too, dear listeners, but stick with it.
That's really nice of you. That's nice of you to like try and extend the fan base of such a small little mom and pop operation like that.
Fellowship might start off a little slow, but it really picks up immediately after the opening title sequence.
Wait, there is a whole lead into that movie that's like 40 minutes long of just a woman talking about a ring.
Snooze.
But then it gets a little slower, I think, because that's Gandalf coming. You get all the exposition of Gandalf coming to fucking Hobbit Town, the Shire, and that weird relationship that he has with Bilbo. Yeah. All right. Well, all
did
right.
Did you know that like that?
I want to watch.
Did you know that Gandalf was like fights in that movie? I didn't. He fights the whole time. He's in like all the battles. It's cool.
Yeah, he rides a horse. Show them the meaning of haste. Shadowfax.
Yeah. Sick.
All right. Well, you want to hear mine?
No, I want to talk about Lord of the Rings. I genuinely have no one to talk to about it.
I did see it pop up again, and I considered watching it, and then I was like, "That's a big investment." I will rewatch it, Daniel, if you want to text about
Absolutely.
It.
Right. Has there been a Lord of the Rings podcast ever?
No, dude, it's just like this huge glaring hole in the podcast network.
As far as I can imagine, that seems like a less vocal fan group, right? Lord of the Rings are quiet about their appreciation.
Yeah, I mean, that's why it's so hard to find them.
Podcast. All right, go on with whatever you're going to say. Nine of the best Lord of the Rings podcasts. Shit. All right.
That's the nine of the best.
The second link is the 10 best Lord of the Rings podcasts and radio in 2019. All right. This market is flooded like that horse river.
Very good. Very good drop. So I started watching a show during quarantine that I don't think I ever would have checked out because I don't really watch British television unless someone is like, no, you have to watch fucking Sherlock or whatever it is. And I'm like, okay, I'll check it out. But this one was just, I came across organically on YouTube. Because there's a comedian I like named, hold on one second. Something.
Do you want me to feed it to you?
James Acaster.
Oh.
I really like James Acaster. And there was this show called Taskmaster, Best of James Acaster. And I was like, what is this? And so I discovered this show called Taskmaster from the BBC. I'm not in confidence on the BBC. I just assume everything that's in Britain is on the BBC.
Yeah. BBC and then like one of four different numbers and that sustains that entire fucking country somehow.
The premise of the show is this: they have five comedians on every season. Each season is eight episodes long, and then there is a host and then his assistant, his like admin basically, and it's this guy that he just shits on the entire time. His name is Alex Horn. And is that right, Alex Horn?
Yes.
Yeah, Alex Horn. And Alex Horn is actually the creator of the entire show. Like, he came up with this whole concept. But they take these comedians, they assign them to tasks out in the real world. They have a house where they do a lot of it, they film a lot of it. The people show up, there's just a little note card. It tells them exactly what their task is. And it's like, throw a potato in this hole, don't step on the green surrounding the hole. And then there's like this red golf green around the hole that surrounds it by like 10 feet. And so their instinct is to do it as fast as possible. They throw the potato at the hole and then the potato is stuck out there. So that they have to go find some sort of supplies to get it back. There's a lot of fun ones. Aubergines are what they call eggplants, I guess, there, but they've got one where they're in a room and they have to get rid of or hide three aubergines, which are these giant fucking eggplants, and they have to think of ways to like hide this thing in this room. And so some of them are eating it as fast as they can. Some of them are tearing it into the tiniest little pieces they can think of, so that it essentially just disintegrates into the carpet. But it's their reactions and how they try to solve these problems is always very, very funny. And the concept of the show is so simple and easy to follow and fun. And then the hosts are also, the relationship between them is like perfect. It's like dead perfect from the go, where they didn't have to figure this out at all. The host is very arrogant and really enjoys forcing people to do what he says. He sits in a throne, and Alex Horn sits next to him in a seat that's just a little bit lower. And Alex Horn is a character, I think this guy is maybe the funniest person I've ever seen on television. The way that he adopts the role of this admin is so fucking good. He's the driest comedian I've ever seen. But he's the one that also oversees all the tasks that are outside of the studio audience. And he's so funny the whole time.
It is. I watched the show because you told me to, and I got immediately hooked on it. And like, the tasks are very simple. I guess deceptively simple. If you've ever taken like critical thinking classes in middle school, or anytime like they put you in a group in middle school and did one of those things where it's like, use these supplies and figure out a way to make this egg land safely when dropped from a height, like build a parachute for the egg, all those kind of like team building things, except it's a group of adult comedians and they're really trying their fucking hardest to solve these things. And just like, here's some supplies, build a bridge, build the tallest bridge in the shortest amount of time. And they, you know, sometimes they think outside the box and like scheme and come up with really creative ways. And most of the times they fail in very funny ways.
Yeah, they do.
And like, there's something, I don't know how, if this is like unique to British shows, but there's something to the fact that winning doesn't really mean too much in that show. Like, if you win the episode, it's like bragging rights. And also you get like a token from each competitor who played that day with you. And if you win the entire series, because it's one team of comedians for the whole season, if you win the entire series, you get a trophy of the Taskmaster's head.
A gold effigy of his head.
Like, just the fact that the stakes are so low, and no one's playing for a bunch of money or a trip or anything like that. It's just like, no, this is just like, it's a game show that's fun, and these comedians are funny, and the tasks are, they seem easy, but we're going to watch these people humiliate themselves anyway. It's an addictive show. I'm glad you showed me it.
Yeah, it's wonderful. And some of the tasks are like, there's different types of tasks. There's tasks that they do in the actual studio audience too, where at the beginning of every show, they're supposed to bring in some item. And so it could be like the item in their house that's the most charming, or like, bring in the most amount of money. And then that becomes the prize for the entire episode. And one of them, in the very early episodes, they said, bring in the best present for Greg Davies. Greg Davies is the host of the show. And they had like 8 weeks to work on this gift. And the gifts were incredible. And one guy got Greg's name tattooed on his foot. Like, for the show. And it's so bold, and that's for like 5 points, and that's something that doesn't actually matter. And it just makes it even better that it's all completely, that none of it matters, because the lengths that they go to win still is really fun.
Yeah, that's a great show. Everyone should check it out. It's Taskmaster.
Yeah, so I did some researching into it and found out that Alex Horn, this is something that he used to do. It wasn't a television show originally. He would just get his friends who were comedians and set them on these tasks, and they would participate because it was very fun. And eventually people were like, I think this could be a show. And he realized he wasn't a ringer for a host, because he's very kind of quiet, dry guy. So he got Greg Davies to do it, who's just absolutely perfect for the role. And he's like, he's just fallen into this admin role that's so good. Like, I'm so jealous of him, because he's clearly the glue to the entire thing, and like really helps keep it going.
The British show that I watched on YouTube is this show called Only Connect, and it's very different. It's still very fun. It's I'm never gonna be good at it, ever. It's full of smart people. The show is in four different segments. The first one, you will see four images, and you need to find out what the connection is between all four of those images. And I'll start with like a very one that is like uncharacteristically easy for this show, where you'll see a picture of Terry from Brooklyn Nine-Nine, and then you see a picture of the actress Penelope from Vicky Cristina Barcelona and Vanilla Sky, and then you'll see the actor from the Mission Impossible franchise, and it's like, ah, all people whose last name is Cruz spelled differently. Terry Crews, Penelope Cruz, Tom Cruise, and then whatever fourth Cruz is. That's like a deceptively easy one. Normally, it just looks like nonsense to you or I. Just the things they're putting together. It's like, here is a streetlight. Okay. Here is Sir Ben Kingsley. All right. Here is a simple illustration of the concept of time. And now I'm going to play a single chord. And you have to find out what all the four of those things have in common. And like, first of all, most of the contestants know them. Like, it's so humbling. They're all so smart. And even if they're wrong, they will explain how they, like, what their thought process was. Like, we think it's this because of X, Y, and Z. Even their explanations of wrongness are smarter than anything that I can come up with. Yeah. And that's the first round. The second round is they show you three images or words in a sequence, and you have to guess what the fourth one is going to be, which is even harder. I'm not even going to try to, like, give you a for instance. The third one is you get a bunch of, there's like a wall of words that are all jumbled together, and you need to find out which.
Yeah, I'm like looking at it now.
Yeah, let's say there's 16 different, or no, there's a...
Yeah, it's 16.
Yeah, 16. You know that of these 16 words, there are four different groups of four, and you need to figure out what those four are, and there are a lot of red herrings in there to trick you. And then the final segment in the show is you'll get a category, and you have to figure out the answer to the category by looking at letters, but it's all of the vowels have been removed. And they're not spaced the way like they're supposed to be spaced. It's just like random letters that are in order, but just like spread out however. And it'll be things like something as simple as aphorisms. And then you just look at a bunch of letters with no vowels, and you have to figure out what it is before the other team does. It's so humbling for someone like me who watches Jeopardy every day and does kind of okay at Jeopardy, and that makes me think I'm smart. I watch this show and I'm a fucking dummy. I can't hang at all on this show.
And are the contestants just people off the street?
They're random people. I mean, they're not like random people. They're a lot of them are like, they're not famous, if that's what you're asking.
Yeah, it's like more like Jeopardy.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
And they're people who are just like really good at pub quizzes and that kind of stuff. They're just
wow.
People who know so much about so many different things.
I'm surprised to hear this is as good as it is, because my instinct tells me it's not great television to watch people think.
It really, I promise you it is.
I'm going to watch it. I'll give it a shot.
It's quite a coup that it took me well over a decade to watch Lord of the Rings, and I got you to watch Only Connect on YouTube after like a 6-minute barely coherent description of it.
Well, I gotta spread out Taskmaster. I don't want to go through it all at once, so I need something else to fill that void. What I'm struck by most of it with it though is that they're so good to their comedians in Great Britain. Like there's so many opportunities for comedians to do work there. Like you could be on the Great British Baking Show. You can be on this show. There's another show. There's like all these other trivia shows that occasionally pop up in the side reel when I'm watching Taskmaster. Yeah. And all the same people are in it. Noel Felding is on like six shows there. And I'm like, well, they're so good to them. And it's not selling out. Like the shows are clever and good. All the game shows are like really fun and they make it even funner. And I'm just jealous. I don't know.
Yeah, I felt extreme jealousy as soon as I watched Taskmaster. I was like, they should bring that to America, and they should expand the criteria for what counts as a comedian, and then let me do it. Because yeah. I think I would have a lot of fun.
Oh, it seems like so much fun. Do you remember, of course you will remember, but I threw a party, a New Year's party, and in order to keep people at my house as opposed to have them drifting around Los Angeles from party to party, I organized an entire night of games, and Absolutely. People were assigned to teams before they came. that was so much fun to do. I had an obstacle course in my backyard mm-hmm. built, and like people moved from different quadrants of the house depending on which games they were playing, and it was always competing against one other team.
Yeah, there was the obstacle course. You had general trivia. You yeah. had, I think, did you have running Flip Cup of Charades?
Yes, that is yeah. a Britannic special. That's Nick Kocher and Brian McElhenney created that game, I think.
Yeah.
But I stole that and then had a couple other, I think there was one other thing that we had people do, but yeah, it was a bunch of competitions in the night. And at the end, I was sort of sad. I was like, that was a lot of fun. I think everybody had a lot of fun. I would have loved to have done that. I would have loved for someone to have created that for me and I could just go do it. All right. Well, I think we're done here, Dan.
Oh, are we? Okay, cool.
I think so. We've been on at this for a while now. Great. I can't imagine anyone still listening.
I will.
You're going to go. No, you can't go. Wait, sorry. We haven't done any of the information on like how people can find us outside of the show if they're curious about us. Yeah, I have all of that. It's fine. I'll do it right now. Except I got to grab it. Okay. I'm in my garage right now. I do this podcast in my garage, and I keep that framed in our room. So I'm going to have to go run inside and grab that. And while I do it, if you could just stall for a little bit, I have a subject for you, if that helps.
Okay.
I know in the past that you've said, it's just science. But I wanted to create some space for you here to talk about why you are so insistent that Republicans are more attractive than Democrats.
Thank you. What an opportunity. To begin with, they dress sharper. You will find a lot of ostentatious clothing on the left because they are more willing to take risks and to stand out. Republicans, on the other hand, just by their very nature, lean conservative, and just like I'm divorcing that from politically conservative and talking more in terms of like traditional fashion sense conservative. And while that might not be everyone's cup of tea, a fine, crisp, tailored suit creates a natural symmetry. And this is why I say it's just science. Like our bodies are trained to appreciate symmetry, and that like a line cut from a perfect suit that goes from top to toes, that tricks your brain into thinking there's some kind of symmetry going on. And someone in a suit or like a very nice dress or a power pantsuit, they look more professional. That makes the brain think like, hey, this person's got it together. It's like something deep in our biology where you see someone that looks mature and looks like they've got it together. And it's like, yeah, that is attractive to me. That is a partner. That is a partner. That's not someone I'm going to have to carry. That's not someone I'm going to have to keep up with. That's someone who's going to join me going forward in the future. That's stability. That's what I'm looking for.
Hey, I'm back. Sorry, I missed all that. I just want to ask, did you get to the part where you talk about how their faces are more symmetrical?
Yup. That's okay, the thing. Great. Whenever I look at Matt Gaetz, I'm like, that's everything is lined up the way it's supposed to be.
That's how a human should look. All right. On Twitter, you can follow DOB_Inc. You can follow me, Soren, at Soren_LTD. You can follow Quick Question at QQ_Soren and Dan. In fact, it's probably the only way you could reach out to Bacon, our CFO, or that he could possibly reach out to you for help. Email QQ with Soren and Daniel at gmail.com. We've got an Instagram, QQ_with_Soren_and_Daniel. And you can't follow Hire or our sound engineer, an editor, Gabe Harder, because there's just no way to do that.
I have a website now.
Okay, let's play this game again. What is it?
It's www.pleasereturngabeharder.com.
Fantastic.
I'm gonna go see if it's under construction. This site can't be reached.
Soren, while you're doing that, I just want to say, like, just to follow up on the things that I said before about conservatives, Hope Hicks is hot as hell, and we're just not allowed to talk about it, and it's absurd. I have nowhere to put that information. I just have to sit here and be like, I'm ideologically opposed to this, and where? Who am I supposed to tell about this?
You can tell me. That's fine. And our audience. Okay. By the way, I'm on pleasereturngabeharder.com, and it's great. It's actually a website. There's a picture of Gabe on it. It tells you how to reach him.
My name is Gabe Harder. I'd really like my website back. This is incredible.
Send me an email. Well, I hope that that works out for you, Gabe.
Yeah, thank you. Me too. It's possible also that I just forgot the login information for gayparter.com, but I'm not convinced. So we'll find out.
It's in the ether somewhere.
Yeah.
All right, bye.